This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
In this hour, help me welcome to the studio Hawes Spencer and Courtney Stewart with The Hook online at readthehook.com. We'll take your calls, comments, your questions at 977-1070. The tragic news this week, the alleged murder of Yardley Love. Courtney, do we say alleged murder? Do we say, what's the responsible journalist to do here? Do we keep saying alleged murder? Because they have not come back and conclusively said she was murdered. Like, there's no official report, right?
Well, I think it's being investigated as a homicide. He's been charged with first-degree murder.
Well, I'm not going to say alleged anymore.
I mean, I think there does need to be a conviction before the alleged gets removed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, certainly there was a killing. She was brutally killed.
Whether or not we know this. Now, the latest news today is more tragic news that we're learning. And what is that? It's just unbelievable. It's just...
Yeah, that's news that just came out that this morning Coach Dom Starcia's father passed away. And he reportedly, we haven't spoken with anyone in the athletic department yet, but according to the reports I've read, he lived at home with the coach and may have been in hospice care, but he was 86. So he may have been ill and it may have been expected, but what a week for to be piled
still
on top
your,
of
your dad.
Of, yeah. I mean, just after everything else that's going on.
Amazing. Yeah. But it was just unbelievable. Hawes, what are your thoughts? I mean, why don't you just take a moment to recap for us what we do know?
What do we know? We know that there was a violent altercation at 222 14th Street Northwest, and we know that the Charlottesville police allege that their suspect, George Wesley Hewley V, has admitted to being involved in an altercation with his girlfriend. And one thing that's been very upsetting to a lot of people is that the lawyer for the accused has asserted that it was a tragic accident, and that has caused a lot of upset in the community, because apparently it's standard for a lawyer to say my client's innocent, but by presenting an alternate scenario that it was a tragic accident when the police report seems quite divergent, that has created some
And the
distress.
Accused is already saying, yeah, I beat her up. I mean, he's admitted to that, right? Yeah, I hit her head against the wall. I mean,
according to the affidavit, as the lawyer said, sometimes those affidavits are wrong.
Yeah, sometimes those affidavits are wrong, but it's hard to know how you know, he's kicked through the door, according to this affidavit. Hairs are in the door. She's been brutally beaten to death, and it's just very hard, I think, for a normal mind to wrap around how that could in any way
is it
an accident
that you kicked in the door? Is it an accident that you hit the door with your hand? Is it an accident that you grabbed her? Is it an accident that you shook her so hard you're hitting her head against the wall multiple times? Is it an accident that you took her computer because you didn't want anybody to see what you had written to her? None of that's an accident, but you know, you're saying that her death is an accident. It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
and Fran Lawrence is I didn't go to law school, and Fran Lawrence is a great attorney, and you give him props for that. But you know what? On that day, the day after, all he should have said to the press is, at this moment, all we're thinking about is the loss of this, you know, beautiful life, this beautiful young woman, and our thoughts and prayers go out to her family. That's all I want to say. You know? But I mean, he's doing the big Hollywood PR thing and trying to get an alternate story out there.
Maybe he wishes he could get that one back. Maybe you could get him in here and talk to him.
That would be a good
interview. Yeah, he's going to come in here. Yeah. Got to do Charlottesville right now. 977-1070 is the phone number. Join this conversation at any time. Your thoughts. So just keep going, Hawes. They arrest. What happened between they're finding her body, the 911, and the arrest of this kid?
Well, I would turn that over to Courtney, because she actually did a story about what might have gone on inside the apartment. And in that story, she explains why one of the very first reports about a police call for alcohol poisoning might have occurred, might have been an error.
Yeah. Courtney, this is a Sunday night, right?
It was Sunday night into Monday morning.
Yeah.
So this was, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's not a huge party night, although is it? Because,
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
They got finals coming up.
They have finals coming up.
So it's not a normal Sunday night.
It depends what day you have exams. I mean, if you don't have an exam Monday and you don't have classes, then maybe Sunday is a great party night.
Yeah.
But what we know from the media's perspective is that we got an announcement from the city saying that there was had been a call to that address on 14th Street for a suspected alcohol overdose. And then it was very brief, and then it just said police are treating the case as a homicide investigation. So you get those two things, and we were all sort of, alcohol overdose, homicide.
Did somebody force somebody to drink? Yeah.
Like, what happened here? But then within 3 hours later, they have arrested George Hughley, and so now we have these details coming out. And then within 24 hours, that affidavit comes out. But there's been so how did they come up with this suspected alcohol overdose story for this early thing? And I am not convinced that anybody in that room with her thought it was only an alcohol overdose. I think we aren't going to get the 911 call anytime soon, if at all. I spoke with Chief Longo, and he says that tape is part of the sealed record.
Yeah, of course. But you're not convinced that 911 call references alcohol.
It could have been that they were panicked and screaming and saying she won't wake up, where, you know, and just they were trying to calm them down. And because it's a college address, it could have been that it goes out over the scanner, you know, could possible overdose. We don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, we're on our way. So it could have been something like that that then gets out into the media and then is reported as this thing. So I think it's too soon to say. It seems really hard to imagine, though, given the description in that affidavit, how anyone could have gone into the room with a hole in the door, at least one hole, with her clearly physically injured, you know, and what was described as blood on her pillow and these brutal injuries to her face. Chief Longo said perhaps it was because she was face down when they found her that they weren't able to see the extent of what had happened.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility.
We're talking with Courtney Stewart and Hoss Spencer of The Hook about the tragic death, the murder of Yardley Love. Let's bring the listeners in. Kelly is in Charlottesville. Kelly, you're on the program. Go right ahead.
Hi, I have two questions, and then I'll hang up and listen. Have I missed it, or have his parents, I don't believe, have made any comments, have they?
Early on, his grandfather made a comment, something along the lines of he was a wonderful child and he was supposed to be graduating and hopefully he will still graduate. But that was perhaps the day after this. Since then, as far as I can tell from the reports I've read, it's been silence from them.
And my other question is, I know there's a lot of talk about the responsibility at UVA, and I was watching the press conference the other day where the dean of students was there, and I felt like there was a little, not blaming, but I'm just curious, what is your guys' opinion of, do you think there's a gap? Do you think the school could have done anything? Or it's just so sad. I don't know. So I'll hang up and listen, but thank you.
Kelly, thank you for the call. Great question. We got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking about the murder of Yardley Love. Hawes, there did seem to be this week at some time sort of this feel from the media that, UVA is to blame here because this kid and the coach is to blame because the coach should have known that he had a violent drunkard on his hands.
Well, that was one of the questions raised at that press conference, and it was very interesting to me because there were four key administrators there, but Courtney points out that the coach, Dom Starzia, was not there, and so we were having to ask Craig Littlepage, the athletic director, for what Dom Starzia knew and when did he know it, and Littlepage at first said, well, he didn't know about this arrest in Lexington that involved a tasing. And then when the New York Times pressed Craig Littlepage a little further, he conceded that he really didn't know what Coach Starzia knew. Now, I've just been handed a report not 25 minutes ago from the Washington Post, which says that suspect George Hughley attacked a sleeping teammate last year who had supposedly kissed his girlfriend, and it was after a night of partying, and Coach Starzia knew about it and told players about this altercation at the next practice and even disciplined Hughley to some degree, though the Post does not know what form that discipline took.
Well, this is huge. So this is just breaking the Washington Post, and we're hearing it here in this community now for the first time. So Dom Starger, the coach, knew about this incident at least.
Right. Now, does bruising a male teammate's face, we don't know, you know, how severe the bruising is, but in an earlier era, brawling with your teammates was probably a fairly...
Boys will be boys kind of thing.
Brawling with a sleeping teammate?
Well, the sleeping teammate takes it to a new level.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's been pointed out over and over is when a 6'1" fella who weighs 209 pounds is involved in a altercation with a woman half his weight and standing 5 foot, you know... In the case of the Lexington police officer, she admitted she was no match for Hewley, and she stood 5'3". I don't know the height of Yardley Love, but it's petite.
It doesn't matter if she was 5'8". You can see from pictures she was a petite. She was athletic, but it doesn't matter. If you weigh, maybe she weighed 120.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way
there's
you're
also
go
the incident at the fraternity house where, you know, he was on her and being physical with her and violent. And
allegedly. We haven't heard his response to these allegations.
But there's
right?
witnesses at the fraternity party who, the North Carolina, guys visiting from North Carolina had to pull him off of her, right?
You know,
that's the story.
I can't even get
that. And that's just one story. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get at. That's just one story.
The thing is that the trickle has started. And I mean, I think that, you know, the floodgates are going to open with these stories, because if you're a senior in college, you're a fourth year, you've been going for 4 years, you've been partying for 4 years, and, you know, perhaps even before that in high school. If you have a problem every time you get drunk with being a belligerent, angry, aggressive, violent person, over the course of 4 years, there are going to be a lot of stories about you, and they're going to end up coming out as people sort of get over the shock and start really thinking back and talking about it.
The phone lines are open, 977-1070. Margo is on the program from Greene County. Margo, go right ahead.
Yes, hi. First of all, I'd like to say I'm surprised you haven't had somebody from the shelter for abuse in Charlottesville to, you know, to come and give information. But I do want to say a person like Hubley, who is violent and angry and drunk, violence escalates. And I don't know if many women realize this. For, you know, usually it starts with a slap or so, but it keeps escalating. And, you know, a lot of women don't realize that.
Well, you'd like to think that that Yardley realized it, I guess, at some point.
It doesn't matter about him. You know, I mean, he's the one doing it, but it's the woman that needs to realize that, you know, once she's hit once, you know, that's not going to be the end of it. And it does escalate.
Margo, thank you for the call. It's an excellent point. And Courtney, that is one of the lessons we hope that will come out of this whole experience.
I mean, I think it's really too soon and to talk about sort of silver linings when you have a beautiful young life cut short. But maybe one of the things that will come out of this is a greater awareness, and all this publicity will help other women, both in college and beyond, or pre-college, recognize signs of abuse and realize that it can get to a point that they could be killed.
We're talking with Courtney Stewart and Hawes Spencer of The Hook. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Let's go to line two. Caller, what's your first name?
Sarah.
You go right ahead.
Well, one of the things that when you talk about witnessing violent episodes and seeing this man drunk and belligerent and people not reporting it and authorities not knowing about it, I wonder if there's that camaraderie of playing a sport that even made Yardley Love reluctant to push anything that would knock someone off the team, even though he was doing things or emailing things that were threatening, that it would ruin that, you know, ruin the lacrosse year, ruin the, you know, that maybe that was part of the recalcitrance for students reporting his behaviors.
I agree that that's a real possibility, because the pressure, I mean, even if it weren't a sort of a high-profile relationship where you have these two top teams, for her to report him, and I don't know this from any interviews I've done, but I'm sort of some things I've read and some things I know just generally, she may have been a little bit in denial, or she may have also realized that if she reported it and made a stink about it, or I hate to call it a stink, but if she had either pressed charges or brought it to the attention, that she would have maybe the men's team mad at her. You know, it would distract from their seasons, that maybe she just felt like we're getting ready to graduate and all I have to do is just get through the next few weeks and this could be over.
It's a great point. And for the folks who don't know who are listening, these teams, and I guess this is true for all colleges, but these teams are incredibly close. I mean, and these people, and we can see it now, they have circled the wagons. These team players, they're not talking to anybody.
Yeah, no, I think there's a very intense bond. I mean, it's certainly with each team, but even my impression is just UVA athletes in general. I mean, there is a sort of a camaraderie and they know each other, and certainly on a particular team, it would be, I would think, almost family-like.
Yeah. And they're just willing to, I guess what we've seen is they're willing to look the other way. And this, again, I will say this again, I've been saying this all week, you know, let's do what we can do to make sure this doesn't happen again. And one of the lessons here is don't look the other way.
You're not
tell
doing
somebody.
Anybody a favor.
Yeah.
You're not doing anybody
tell
a
somebody.
Favor.
I mean, if you know of the violence or somebody who's drinking too much or taking drugs and is violent with somebody they're close to, you have to tell somebody.
Yeah. I mean, it's focused on Yardley Love right now, which it should be. She's the one that was killed. But at the same time, if she had turned him in or something else, he would perhaps not be up on first-degree murder charges right now. It would have been the kinder thing to do to get him help rather than allow this to go on to the point that he took somebody's life.
Let's go to Billy. She's in Charlottesville. Billy, go right ahead.
First, I want to speak to those who have been so critical of Dom Starzia. He's an outstanding coach and an outstanding human being, and he's demonstrated that in lots of ways. And the fact that he didn't know, or if he did, I'm sure that he disciplined this young man in whatever way he thought was appropriate, but did not, I'm sure, ever think it would go to this end. When you talk about responsibility, I think you really have to look to the parents first. And clearly, from a news story I heard this morning, where he jumped out of a boat his father was in, after a violent argument with his father. His father knew he had a violent temper, and it seems to me as a parent he should have stepped in and done something. As far as I know, the parents had done nothing.
Billy, it's a great point. And what is that story, Courtney, for those who haven't heard it?
You know, that's a story that I've heard I've seen it a couple of different ways, but the gist of it is that his family owns property, or owned, I don't know if it's still current, in Palm Beach County. And so they were on what was described as a 40-foot yacht. And I think it was the father, the Hughley father and son, and a cousin. And that there was some argument, altercation that became so heated that either the father called some sort of water police or Coast Guard kind of situation to come break it up. It got to the point that George Hughley, the son, jumped overboard in an attempt to swim to shore about half a mile away, at which point he was plucked out of the water, and then his father decided, I guess, not to press charges.
Here's what I want to know. How come somebody else has to get your son out of the water? I mean, how come the dad didn't go get his son who's swimming away?
How could you get a 210-pound drunk swimmer? I mean, in a 40-foot yacht, I mean, you'd get dragged under. You know, they probably had a net or some kind of rope mechanism
maybe,
to trap
maybe
him.
Maybe it was a harpoon.
Bill's on the line. Bill's on the program in Charlottesville. Bill, go right ahead.
Okay, I can't believe some of the stuff I'm hearing, but let me weigh in on the boat story first, okay?
Yeah, go right ahead.
They were supposedly, from a source that I heard from, was that they were about a quarter of a mile off of shore, just getting ready to go out, when the father and the son got into a heated argument. I don't know if Paul was involved. I do know that the kid jumped overboard and said, "That's all right, you go ahead and go. I'm going to swim to shore." And the rest you will probably come out in testimony and everything. As far as, one student killing another student, you know, and this has been going on for quite some time, where we've had students involved with either rape or murder or whatever, like the Echols Scholar and the Jefferson Scholar.
Jens Soring,
yeah.
And you can go back even further. Now, Halls, who's a good friend, he may remember when the school went co-ed that things were so bad that some of us had to volunteer for escort duty across the campus.
Yeah, back in the 70s, Charlottesville was actually known for a time, a nickname among students was Rape City, because all of a sudden the rape statistics went through the roof after co-education.
Yeah, and part of the problem was that there were some pubs that opened up on the corner, and many of the students, especially women, lived close, and I being in real estate, would have to be dealing with parents and so forth, and I said, listen, this is an area that I'm not too keen on as far as your daughters go, but I said, don't trust my statements. Check with the university police and the city police, which was Deke Bowen at the time.
Bill, so let me just break in here. Bill, how do you stop this from happening again? I mean, if I hear you right, well, this has been going on a long time. This is, we can't get to the point where we say this is just what students do once in a while, can we?
No. But what I'm saying is that it's a campus. There's a lot of alcohol. A lot of the passing of the rites of spring and everything else. And every once in a while, something goes tragically wrong, okay? I mean, I think the last time that somebody was killed was a student killed by somebody out of Greene County.
Bill, thanks for the call. We're going to have to break for local news. We got lines open at 977-1070. We're talking with Hawes Spencer and Courtney Stewart about the tragic murder of Yardley Love. We're talking with Hawes Spencer and Courtney Stewart of The Hook online at readthehook.com. Doing some fantastic reporting this week. And, of course, Courtney Stewart on with Nancy Grace, the reporter people love to hate. Because she's doing this story, right? I mean, you've been on...
She has been doing the story.
What's it like to talk to Nancy Grace?
Well, you know, you get in as many words as Nancy Grace wants you to get in. That's what it's like. And sometimes that's not as many as you said.
She likes to interrupt you, right? Hawes, remind us now of the news breaking just this afternoon from the Washington Post.
That's right, Coy. Less than an hour ago, the Washington Post put a story on their website saying that lacrosse coach Dom Starzia knew about a 2009 altercation in which murder suspect George Hewley V attacked a sleeping roommate, leaving his face bruised teammate. After the teammate allegedly kissed
Yardley
Love. So
does it say, I haven't read that yet, does it say which, in his apartment, or does it say, was it in a fraternity house? Or?
It does not that I see say that.
So he attacks a sleeping teammate because the guy allegedly kissed his girlfriend.
That's what happened.
And
supposedly.
Dom, and the angle of the Washington Post is Dom Starzia knew about this and he disciplined about it.
Disciplined
him.
But they don't know how he disciplined him.
No, we don't.
And did they look into whether? I mean, I guess they'd have to see if he was suspended from any games or if he missed. You know, I mean, you wonder what is discipline if you're back out on the field.
Yeah, is it
weekend.
Just extra laps or what?
I haven't read that, but I'm interested in hearing. Yeah. If you can kind of find the gaps.
Hawes, comment on this idea that clearly there's some in the media that are looking for culpability on the part of the coach, not necessarily saying, well, he knew he had a killer on his hands, but saying you knew you had a really violent kid on your hands, and maybe you should have done something about it. It's an interesting angle, and we let's open up the phone lines 977-1070. The press conference for the university was interesting that Dom Starzia was not a part of that press conference.
I have a sort of a personal feeling about this, which is that I think that people should be very, very careful before they pick a whipping boy and a scapegoat.
Yeah, yeah.
To really see, let all the information come out, because this guy might not have done anything that any other coach on any team didn't do the same, you know, at any school.
Yeah, great point.
And so he's had this terrible thing happen, and I just would not like to see one person blamed so that it can go away and like we feel like we've washed our hands of it and now no more murders will happen because we got rid of the bad guy and it was the coach.
Yeah.
That really kind of makes me mad thinking about
it. I totally agree. It's a fantastic point. And people are so quick here to try to find, you know, the guilty person when the guilty person, I think personally, is in jail,
the guilty person is in jail, exactly. Yeah. And there may be things that we can learn from this, and there may be things that people should have done, but nobody wanted Yardley Love to die. I mean, nobody, that's just not the case. And so maybe there does need to be some blame cast, but not until there's really a thorough vetting of information and we have all the pieces.
Right, like look at what happened at Duke a few years ago.
Yeah.
Where they fired their coach, canceled their season.
And those guys didn't even do anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. Let's go to Betty. She joins the program in Charlottesville. Betty, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks, Coy. I have a question. I read that he was ordered into substance abuse counseling after the incident in Lexington. Does anyone know if he actually went through with that substance abuse counseling?
I read this, I think, in the Progress, that he completed both his community service, which I think he did at the Blue Ridge Food Bank, and for which he got a high rating for his work, and that he also completed, I think, a 20-hour substance abuse program. So, and that was last spring. So this is a guy who had 20 hours of counseling in substance abuse within a year.
Here in Charlottesville, do we know, Courtney?
I believe so, but I'm not going from personal firsthand interviews or information, but that is what I read. So that's my understanding.
Right. It just is still odd to me that UVA didn't know about any of this, any of what happened in Lexington, didn't know that he was in community service, didn't know he had substance abuse counseling. I just find this a little unbelievable, but thanks for all the reporting you're doing.
Oh, sure.
Betty, thanks for the call. I totally believe the university when they say they didn't know. I mean, all those people, they're not going to stand up to national media and lie. I totally believe John Castine and the dean and, when they say, we didn't know about this, and
right.
We would have loved to have known about this. We should know about
sure.
this.
Sure. And I remember when I once got arrested, they didn't ask me where I was in school.
Yeah.
And there are, I hate to say it, but there are probably a lot of similar, if not as violent, arrests, for drunk in public or for various things that happen when students go and visit friends at other schools.
Or go home for the holidays.
Home for the holidays. I mean, if they, I'm not saying that every student is being arrested,
yeah.
In all kinds of
Now, we've heard
places.
Talk of the, John Castine said there's obviously, something that needs to be fixed with the law that perhaps we should know about this. And we've heard already there's some pushback from law enforcement saying, we don't have the money for this. We don't have the bandwidth or the money to notify every college of every college kid that gets into trouble.
Right. Well, where would it end? Suppose you had to ask everybody you arrest where they go to school. And what if they don't go to school? Ask them where they work and then notify their workplace, or ask them if they have some part-time job and then tell the people at that part-time job. Is it the job of police to do all this notification? Maybe there could be some sort of more national database. I wonder if anyone's thought about that or if that creates too many privacy issues.
I'm also interested to see if UVA has a policy about self-reporting. They have this honor code.
Is that an honor violation if you've been arrested?
Yeah, if you've been arrested. I mean, maybe it's not now, but if they created a policy that it was a requirement, then it would seem that violation of that would become an honor code violation and could result in your expulsion, even if just, if telling them, hey, sorry, I had a little problem wherever and I got arrested, it doesn't mean you're going to be expelled, but not reporting it would be the,
We're talking with Courtney Stewart and Hawes Spencer of The Hook. The phone lines are open for you to join this conversation. Your thoughts about the tragic news this week, the murder of Yardley Love. Tom is on the line in Charlottesville. Tom, go right ahead.
Yes, I just had a quick thought. The burden, I think, can be back on the university and on other people to actually do criminal background checks on a routine basis. It should show up on that.
But should the university be in the business of doing background checks on their students?
Sure.
You believe they should?
If they're on scholarship or have any type of... Yeah, I would think that would be appropriate.
But how often would you have to do them, particularly since this incident in Lexington occurred after the student had matriculated?
Sure, probably yearly, I would think.
Annually.
I would think that would be a reasonable thing to have done. I think to have a self-reporting, to have a potential criminal self-report doesn't make sense. You're not going to have a person self-report their crime.
But I think that the... guilty pleas in Lexington didn't happen until this year, which means
January of 2009.
January of 2009 was
the court with the, and then so we're assuming that in the next few weeks is when he served his 50 years of community service.
I think 50 it was
years,
over
sorry.
The next
50
few...
hours of community service.
Yeah, it was over the next few months, I think.
Yeah. Tom, thank you for the call. Let's go to Randolph. He's in Albemarle. Randolph, go right ahead.
Yeah, I think you also need to take a look at the laws that are out there that are called parentis in absentia, where the institution has to act as the parent in the parent's absence. For instance, if a woman, a student, college student gets pregnant, they consider that a life-altering experience, or it could be a medical condition. They have to report that to the parents. Same thing if, say, a woman has bulimia or anorexia and she has a major health problem that could be serious, that has to be also reported. So you would think that the laws, as are stated now, that govern that kind of activity by the school and having to inform the parents of that might also apply in this case.
Is that ever practiced? I mean, it may be a law, but does any school actually do that? I mean, I feel like
I did some counseling in Williamsburg, and I was a private counselor, therapist, and one of the things that I had as a mainstay of my practice there were eating disorders and pregnant girls being sent to me by the school psych services at College of William & Mary, which is also, to an extent, governed by the Commonwealth. And that was the reason why I had a busy practice, is that psych services was sending them over to me in private practice. Now, this goes back to the 80s, but the law still applies to this day, because if they were to go in and report that they were pregnant, the first thing that happens is they say, don't talk to me any longer, go see a private therapist, because they would then have to turn around and violate their privacy between therapist and patient.
If they're school employed. If it's like a school counselor.
Yeah, if it's a school counselor. But what I'm saying is there are laws that govern the behavior of the institution and how they are to conduct themselves. You all were talking about privacy issues. The privacy issues have already been breached by that law.
Randolph, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to, I've got a lot of folks trying to get through here on the lines. Let's go to Jim in Charlottesville. Jim, go right ahead.
Hey, Coy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I don't understand where you all are going with all this. I think in a few weeks we'll have, about 4,000 or 5,000 students graduate, and I expect a couple of hundred of them might have had a violent incident of some kind, but that still leaves about 5,000 that probably went through 4 years without any event happening. If you want to try to control that 1%, that had problems, I haven't heard any specific quantitative solutions from you as to what you're going to do if someone calls you and says that one of your students got arrested for being drunk in public. So,
well, I think the university, just to respond to that, I think the university, and I said this yesterday, the University of Virginia has a number of national model programs that are fantastic, and I know some of the people who work in these programs that provide terrific education and counseling to their students. So, we got on this line of conversation because we were talking about what President Castine had said, that there's a problem maybe with the they didn't know anything about this, and maybe they should have, and maybe the law needs to be fixed so that universities are notified when students are arrested for violence and they're tasered in another town. It's an interesting question. Let's go to Steve. He's in Albemarle. Steve, go right ahead.
Yeah, I think these privacy concerns are being really overwrought by what is a horrible tragedy. I don't think, even if they've been aware, that they could have probably prevented this. I mean, it's just, you're seemingly trading away everything for what might have happened, and I don't think you can't have perfect knowledge, and you can't really do what it, I mean, if it's going to notify a school, and most of these kids that we're talking about are over 18 years old, so then again, why don't we motivate the workforce or the neighborhood, or where does it stop? I think we're trying to find an answer to a horrible crime with just trying to see what it is we can do. And I'm not saying we can't do anything. I just think that this reporting thing may, in fact, be an enormous violation of privacy in a world where our privacy seemingly is violated every day by, just the simplest of things.
And I don't think this would have saved this girl. I wish it were otherwise, but I'm not convinced it would have.
But you can understand the strong emotion of so many people here in this community. It's a university town, and we're trying to figure out, well, how would you possibly stop something like this from happening again?
Well, I don't. He seems to have done something absolutely crazy and insane. How do you stop crazy and insane people from doing things anywhere? Just because they're going to a four-year institution doesn't mean that they've got serious problems that aren't masked by all other things. I don't understand. You know, reporting of it, I can't believe that would have stopped it anyway. I mean, this person had a serious, serious. You know, this man was tased and couldn't remember it. I don't know about you, but I think I, no matter how drunk I'd gotten, if somebody tased me, I'd have remembered.
I'd probably never forget it.
You know, but I just don't. I mean, I think the reaction is normal and reasonable, but at the same time, people are trying to solve something that may, in fact, be unsolvable.
So you're saying even if he was in every great program UVA has, he still could have done something like this?
Well, absolutely. When you look at the Washington Post, I mean, this man was quoted about what happened at Duke, and told by his father, according to the article, this is the kind of, he should protect his reputation and do all this other stuff. This kid had more money and advantages than almost anybody you can think of, and it didn't make a difference. Rich people murder people.
Steve, thank you for the call. It's a great point. Let's go to Caroline. She's in Palmyra. Caroline, go right ahead.
I just wanted to point out that you cannot even get your children's grades when they're in college. As a parent paying the bills, you do not have access to their grades. So I don't know how they would report any kind of pregnancies or any other kind of illnesses or anything to people. Plus, when you look at things like that Yen Soaring, he probably didn't have a record of history of, you know, murder and beating up people and being drunk in public, and he's went out and killed his, you know, girlfriend's parents.
It's an excellent point.
So you can't always do it that way. So there's lots of different ways that they could have done something, but, you know, why don't they get all the students at UVA and see, does the lacrosse team or the football team have more percentages of arrests than the regular population of the university?
Caroline, thanks for the call. And Courtney, that's an angle that the Washington Post was trying to make in yesterday's paper, right?
Yeah, with the talking about the 8 arrests of various lacrosse players on the team. Yeah, I was just thinking when one of those callers was talking that it's so much easier to take a puzzle apart than it is to put it together. And so when you've got all the pieces here, we can just start picking them apart and looking and moving backwards and thinking we understand why something happened, when in reality, I don't know that if you didn't know this murder was coming, even with all the pieces, I don't know that you could have put it together.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I agree with you. And personally, I will just say that's why I think for anybody in the media or anybody to think that Dom Starja or any of the coaches or anybody at UVA is culpable is crazy.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And that post piece that talked about the arrests, it had some statistics and it said it was like 8 of these guys had arrested. Well, if that means nothing, if you don't know what occurs in the general college population, what occurs in society at large, what occurs on the football team.
Yeah.
And if you don't compare it to other
statistics. It was a bit irresponsible, I thought.
It doesn't help you understand the big picture, but it's feeding into this like human urge to understand how this happened so we can say it won't happen again because it's so awful.
Bill's on the program. He's in Charlottesville. Bill, go right ahead.
Yeah, just about the privacy concern and all that kind of thing. I can tell you exactly how I handled it a couple of years ago with my own two. Is that you want to go to school? Great. You want to have privacy? Okay. How are you going to pay for it?
You want me to pay for your school? You don't get any privacy. That's one way to do it. Hawkins is on the line in Earliesville. Hawkins, go right ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Bob. Bob, go ahead.
Bob. Yeah, my daughter went to Bridgewater College, and they tell the students right off, your parents will get a copy of your grades, and if you get into any trouble, your family will be notified.
I don't have any problem with that. I mean, if I'm paying my kid's tuition bill, I mean, I'd want to know.
But what if you're not paying the tuition bill?
If it's just my child, well, if they're still under 18, I think I have a right to know.
Right, but I mean, most college kids have turned 18.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be a few for
I don't know. I mean, if they're paying their own way, I mean, they're paying for their own education.
Right, then at that point.
Let's go to Hawkins. He is in Earliesville. Hawkins, go ahead.
Hey, Corey, great show. My point is, how would we actually practically implement this? How is, if this guy gets arrested in Florida and doesn't happen to say, I'm a student at the University of Virginia. Maybe you should call them and tell them you arrested me. I don't understand how, is there going to be a national database of 20-year-old violent people, or... I don't get how this would work practically.
And I don't either. I'm not quite sure anybody has an idea. It's a great point, Hawkins. Let's go to Mimi. We got time for one more call. Mimi, go ahead.
First, I'd like to say that when my children were turned 18, I said, congratulations, you are now responsible for your own behavior. And let them know it, that legally they were responsible for their own behavior. And second, when they were in college, we had the same problem with no grades. You know, it was just given to the kids and not to the parents. And my response to that was, your next semester's tuition will be paid when I get the grades from you.
There you go.
Period.
Mimi, thank you for the call. Thanks for all the callers today. And thank you to Haas Spencer and Courtney Stewart of The Hook. They'll continue to follow this story, as will the folks here in the 24-hour WINA newsroom.
Thank you, Coy.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Coy.
Y'all have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.